we can start and end it whenever we want.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So, and it's also weird that we're like talking to someone instead of like just talking to ourselves, so it's almost like a three-person conversation.
Well, yeah, although technically the recording is going to be like the third person anyway, regardless. So, yeah.
So I guess I'll call this what should we call this? The WTI podcast, the whatever
WTI.
This, yeah, whatever this is podcast, whatever this is.
I was thinking, after cinema.
After cinema, yeah, let me.
Well, we are right. We just did get out of the movie theater, so.
We could call it podcast AF. After cinema. No, wait, never mind. Dang it, that's the wrong acronym.
It's podcast AC.
Yeah.
After cinema, but that's the AC, like short for air conditioning. That's be weird.
Dang. It's
AT after theater, or AM after movie, but weird.
Yeah. So maybe
we'll just call it the podcast work in progress, WIP. The podcast WIP.
WIP?
Yeah, work in progress.
I've been recording, so this first part of it is going to be us talking about the acronyms and stuff.
Well, yeah, but then again, there's no fun in... Where's the fun in that, right?
I guess so. So, since we're talking to someone right now, we should tell them what we just did.
Sure.
Okay, so Mr. Phone, we just came out of the theater and we saw...
Shape of Water.
Directed and written by
Guillermo del Toro.
I guess we could start starring Sally Hawkins,
Octavia Spencer,
and then Michael Shannon,
and Doug Jones,
and
many, many more.
And many, many more. Who else notable? There was that guy Sally Hawkins was with in that apartment. Richard
him.
Jenkins. What else has he been in? I feel like I would know him.
You would think.
Step Brothers? Have you ever seen Step
Brothers? No, I haven't.
What? Okay. Did you ever see Kong?
The no. Kong Skull Island? No. Although some of
Spotlight?
Nope.
I guess I just know him from...
Turbo! I haven't seen Turbo, but it's cute. Okay.
Whatever. Okay. So, I guess initial thoughts?
The initial thoughts for that movie, for me, personally, was wow.
Wow.
I'd seen Guillermo del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth, and that was spot on. The way they did the amphibious man in Shape of Water was excellent. It was just like to rival that of Pan's Labyrinth, perhaps even more, in my opinion.
He does have, like, a thing going where, like, he does, like, imagery, and it's almost like, maybe that's why I'm attached to it, because it's almost like thespian, you know? Almost like Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I want to know is, for the amphibious man, did the actor wear, like, the suit, and then... the pixelation, probably, for the outfit, because it would be a lot of makeup for the scales themselves. I bet them, if hypothetically, if it was an actual costume, well, no. Then again, it would probably put... Oh, shoot. That's my train of thought again.
No, it's
Dang
okay.
It.
I was thinking, I was trying to decipher that, too, and maybe it was, we've got to the point where CGI isn't, like, decipherable anymore. Maybe it's, like,
yeah.
And that could be the case, but, yeah... I guess I was saying, because it's Shakespearean, because, like the imagery he uses, like, Michael Shannon plays, like, the villainous person, and, like, as the narrative goes on, like, he kind of rots away, almost, and it's kind of neat looking at that.
The villain gained his just desserts in the end.
Yeah, and, like, all the color imagery, too, where he's, like, he's kind of forced to face, the people he hates the most.
Imagine, and remember the beginning scene when she was sleeping in water, well, underwater? That was beautiful. It's kind of like a flash forward thing for Pan's Labyrinth, because you see the girl dying, and then, of course, it goes flashing back to actually seeing what led to this to that point. So it's kind of like a flash forward in a way. So it was kind of Pan's Labyrinth-esque for the beginning scene of the movie, because, you know, she was sleeping on this, like in the water because she's above her sofa. But then, of course, it was like the water was disappearing, and, you know, it's kind of like a flash forward.
I think there is a lot of similarities, because in Pan's Labyrinth, there's kind of like, there's a certain era he sticks the story in, and then in the background, it kind of plays into the forefront a little bit.
Yep.
I guess this one is the 50s,
I think so. It's because it's before the Soviets, you know, it's
the space race.
Yes. And it was definitely before the civil rights stuff. So it'd probably be like after in the 40s, because the space race could be during the, is it during the Cold War or is it after World War II?
We should know, but you know.
Yeah, history is not our focus.
Well, generally we know like it's during the 50-ish.
Yeah.
Area, right.
Yeah. Especially with those Cadillacs, those cars were beautiful.
Yeah. It's just.
You can never find good cars like those anymore.
Yeah, it's cool where he like he takes the characters and it's cool where he kind of shapes the characters as either villainous or you know protagonist.
Yeah.
In a unique way.
Not to mention, I think the villain Strikeland, was it? Was it Strikeland for his character's last name?
Yeah, Strickland.
Strickland.
Richard Strickland.
Yeah, because I think when he was having sex with his wife on the bed scene, he, you know, told her to be quiet. I bet he was imagining doing it to Eliza, because, you know, he was flirting with her, so he was thinking of having an affair with the girl.
Like, everything he does is, like, it's for a purpose, but it's, like, animalistic, like... You know?
You know, when I first saw this, it kind of felt like the Little Mermaid, you know, because Ariel traded her fins for legs and she couldn't talk. It's almost kind of like the reversal of a Little Mermaid, you know, because she wasn't originally a mermaid. She was a human, but she didn't have the voice. And it was also kind of like Beauty and the Beast type of thing, too, because Beauty falls in love with someone that's a suitor that's, you know, not human, but can act pretty much like human.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I wouldn't say tropes, but like a lot of narrative similarities with other stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you have two different people in different situations, but they come together in the end.
Now, El Toro's Pan's Labyrinth was considered a dark fantasy. Would Shape of Water be considered a dark fantasy, or would it be science fiction because of Amphibious Man? Which would it be, dark fantasy or sci-fi? Or
what would you consider Hellboy?
Hellboy? I haven't seen Hellboy,
yeah.
So.
I'll look up Hellboy and see what its genre is.
Guillermo del Toro do that?
Yeah, he did it.
Oh.
See, Guillermo del Toro?
Cool.
Action, horror, fantasy, horror.
Huh. Well, so, yeah, horror fantasy would be for Pan's Labyrinth 2.
Yeah, I think it'd be fantasy horror for this one as well. Old romance.
That too.
I don't know. It's just unique to have a romantic, like, genre in this sort of way.
Yeah. Very, very true. Now, what about some of the other character developments that you've recognized in the movie? I definitely like the Russian doctor. It's too bad what happened to him in the end. He didn't deserve it to die like that.
Yeah, I just like how everything, like, Guillermo del Toro, like, wrapped everything up in a perfect knot, you know? Like, his death was perfect because he got slit in the throat where he doesn't have individuality. Like, he can't speak anymore.
Well, I was referring, that was Strikeland. I was referring.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, how he wrapped everything up. I was trying to think of other people, too, but.
Oh, I thought you were referring to the Russian doctor.
I was, but.
But the Russian doctor got shot.
Oh, yeah, he did get shot.
In the gut and in the jaw. Which is how Strikeland was able to agonize and painfully torture him with that very wound. Well, both wounds, actually.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that, like, Michael Shannon keeps getting these, like, villainous roles, because he's, like, he's so perfect. Like, he's a perfect actor.
Yeah. Wait, has he ever done any...
Has he ever done, like, any heroine roles?
Yeah.
I guess, major... movies.
Huh. He was in Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
He was Zod.
Yeah, remember that? He's Zod.
Oh, wow. I did not even recognize him.
Did you ever see Midnight Special?
No.
That was really good with him.
What genre is it?
It's a sci-fi drama.
Oh.
Well, you should watch it, yeah.
Huh. As long as it's not horror, because I can't stand horror movies for the life of me. It just gives me nightmares for at least a couple of weeks. Like one time, I was at a friend's house during Halloween and watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Mm-hmm. That gave me... Wow, I just hated that movie. It scared the crap out of me. I, like, literally had nightmares for at least a couple of weeks. Actually,
yeah.
No, not a couple of weeks. Scratch that. A couple of days. At least close to a week tops. But then again, I just don't have the stomach for horror movies. But hey, I don't mind it.
I just don't like horror movies. Well, I'm kind of attracted to it, too. But, like, the little... It's horror where it's, like, grounded, and it's, like, things that could, you feel like could actually happen in day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Like, he's the type of villain that, like, you kind of see yourself in.
Yeah.
Which kind of, and he plays a bunch of type of villains like that. But, yeah.
Then again, was Get Out a horror movie? No, it's not. I think it was a thriller. Or suspense thriller.
What did Jordan Peele call it? He called it, like, a... a biography, but like he made it like out to be like it's not as much as a, like a horror as like a depiction of real life as what's happening in like you know the other races.
Yeah. Can, look at that, the Gene Regal is gone, so it's now real cinemas. That's crazy.
Oh. We're referring to the what do you say? Logo? Not the logo. What do you call that?
I have no idea.
The lettering? The lettering on the lettering building.
Of the Regal Cinema. So the G is gone. I think the light probably blew out, but now it says Real Cinemas. That could be a good title.
Yeah, that's probably a better name than Regal.
I was referring to the podcast. Well, at least this this topic, anyway.
This topic?
Yeah, since we're talking about movies and we watched it from the cinema.
Do you want to go, like... So we kind of talked about the acting.
Yep.
Is there anything else you want to add to the acting part of it? Maybe... I mean, Doug Jones keeps getting these, like, costumed roles, but he kind of, like... He's good in them in a way. Like, he was the Pan's Labyrinth person, too.
Oh, he was the Fawn!
Yeah.
Nice!
He, like, puts himself in these roles and, like, you can see, like, human side to them in a way. And I like that.
Oh, and he's in Star Trek, too.
Yep. The Bye-Bye Man?
Bye-Bye Man. Bye-Bye Man.
I never saw that one.
Yeah, it's a horror movie, so I'm not going to watch it.
Oh, he's in Han Solo. He's in the Solo movie.
Really?
The new one. Yeah.
Really? What's he going to be?
Is he in the... I hope I just didn't pass over that in... Actor. Han Solo... Maybe I'm just imagining things.
Eh.
Oh, well.
What can you do, right?
What can you do? I could look a little harder, but I won't.
Yeah, at least not right now. Okay, what about the special effects going on in that movie? Like all the water going on in that room, the first scene,
everything,
the blood, and the way she was controlling the water with the droplets from she was on the bus.
Yeah, I would say like everything, like there's always a sense of movement in every shot, in every frame. I think it's cool. Like,
oh yeah.
It's everything's like meticulous, but it still feels like the camera has like freedom to it.
Yeah.
I think Guillermo del Toro does that with a lot of his movies. Like with Pan's Labyrinth, he always pans. With the camera.
Yeah.
But, what else? Yeah, everything, like, all the special effects were, they seemed believable.
Mm-hmm.
So, I like you said, we couldn't decipher between the CGI and the actual costuming, so.
Yeah. If it was, like, a costuming, it kind of, like, the scales could be, like, the special effects with Pete had with the tree bark in Hunger Games. Have you seen the Hunger Games?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the way that his arm had the designs and the makings of the tree trunk, so for ultimate camouflage.
Yeah.
Almost like that type of special effects.
I mean, costume designers, I mean, they've gotten so good these days, and so, you know, meticulous with their little designs that I would believe it.
Yeah.
What about Octavia Spencer?
She was, I liked her.
Yeah, the humor hit, like, really well in the movie.
And the way that she stood up to her husband. That was her husband, right? When Sinclair came?
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. Should we give a summary? We haven't given a summary yet.
Oh, shoot. That should have been in the first thing we should have
said. How long have we gone? 14 minutes without a summary?
Wow. Ooh,
sorry, guys.
Yeah, right. Our bad. We haven't introduced ourselves either.
Oh, yeah. All right, you want to go first?
Sure. I'm Michael. Pleased to meet you, everyone.
I'm Alex, also. Please meet you. All right.
Just kind of some slack. This is our first thing.
Yeah.
Well, podcast.
Summary.
Will this be calling the podcast or will this be a recording, which led to said podcast?
I don't know what it is.
Me neither. Nice. But I love it.
This is just like a thing we do now. All right.
Yeah, we're just starting.
A summary. So, I guess.
The mute. All right, so the main character is a mute.
Yeah, played by Sally Hawkins.
And she works in a janitorial and a research facility.
Along with Octavius, her name's Zelda Fuller.
Yes.
The character name, played by Octavia Spencer.
Whose middle name for Zelda was Delilah, I believe, according to the synopsis, right? I mean, she mentioned Delilah before.
According to the synopsis?
No, like, in the scene, he keeps calling her...
Oh, because...
Zelda D.
You talking about when Richard, the bad guy, was talking about, like, the Bible, the biblical story about Samson...
No, I meant that was way before. I was talking way before when they first asked, talked to the two of them. Anyways, I'm skipping ahead of myself. Let's go to the synopsis, shall we?
Yeah, we should. We should continue it.
So we got a mute young woman who works as a janitor in a research facility.
Who lives with?
Next
door neighbor too.
A man named Giles, who is played by Richard Jenkins.
Kind of an older fellow.
Very artistic. I'm not sure if he's closeted gay, but he may be open, or he's trying to get open.
Yeah, he's keeping it closed doors because it's not, you know, accepted as well back in the 50s.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, and then, yeah.
And he also has a lot of cats. Lots of cats.
So he's pretty lonesome, yeah. And then...
Yeah. But at least he has his art.
Yeah. And Elisa goes over there, and... she's kind of lonesome too.
You mean Eliza?
Eliza.
Yes.
And she's the mute. She goes over there and she appreciates him because of his artistic and like.
And also because, well, they get along so well.
Yeah, he's open to conversation and.
And he has the refrigerator full of key lime pie.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Yes. Anyway.
That'd be a spoiler, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be a spoiler?
Well, no, it wouldn't technically be a spoiler.
Well, if we just say pie, he's got pie in his fridge, they wouldn't know.
Well, eventually you'll find out it's key lime.
Yeah, okay, so...
Anyway.
Yeah, she goes to the... She works at the...
A research facility. And then some special forces, including Michael Shannon's character, Richard Strickland, and they bring an amphibious fish-like... Well... Fish human hybrid, or it could be a fish mutant.
Yeah, over from the Amazon.
Yes, South America. And eventually.
They're running an operation, right?
They're running experiments on him because they want to get a head start for the space
program,
space race, space and they were race, thinking about putting the amphibious man played by Doug Jones.
Yeah.
Into space.
He was their space.
Guinea pig. Yeah,
monkey,
because
whatever.
Originally they mentioned about bringing a dog out in space, and they had a real laugh. Blah,
yeah.
Blah, blah.
That was the Russians who sent it or whatever.
Dosvidanya, doggy!
Yeah. What else?
Anyway, the head of in charge of research is Michael Strandberg, who plays Dr. Robert Hofstreicher.
Yeah, he's a Russian.
Yes. He is actually, like, undercover, like a double agent working for the Russians.
Yeah, pretty much. And, so things pretty much go haywire after that?
Especially after Strickland lost his two fingers to the amphibious man,
which
let a lot of blood, which made Hawkins and Spencer go into the room where said fish man is, so they can clean up all the blood.
Yeah.
Hawkins finds the amphibious man, and then, of course...
Or Eliza,
well,
maybe.
Yeah, but I was not referring to Strickland as... Hawkins referring to, you know,
the actress's
name.
The mute.
Yeah, the mute. Anyway,
they develop a relationship, and then
especially when she fed him eggs.
Oh yeah,
he has a thing for eggs,
which
go
is
figure.
Odd. Yeah. Okay, so basically after he gets his Mr. Richard Strickland, played by Michael Shannon, after he gets his fingers chopped or eaten off.
Yeah, cut off. Two
cut
fingers
off, yeah.
Actually.
It's basically the impetus for like everything else in the story, right?
Yep.
He gets irritated, and
oh,
he's like,
yes.
Yeah.
He became an egotistical, misogynistic jerk face.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's pretty typical for the time.
Yes.
So, it just got aggrandized. Like, he just did everything more crazy.
Oh, yeah. And Eliza, the mute, she's, a mute because, you know, something damaged her voice box. Do you know what actually did cause the voice box? Did it mention anything?
They just said she
Got abandoned from a baby because she was an orphan. And something or someone damaged her voice box.
Yeah.
And then she uses sign language to,
But she's always had the voice, like, an absent voice box, right?
I'm not sure. I mean, she tried...
They mentioned it, right? They said, like, it showed up, she was abandoned, and then... Well, I guess maybe Michael Shannon's character, he assumed that. He said, like, why would anyone do that? Or people are so cynical or something.
People are so cruel.
Yeah, I think that was the line. So, no one really knows. But yeah. I don't think that's the point. I don't know.
Nah.
I think it's maybe, like, the whole point of the narrative is finding individuality and, like, accepting.
Yep, and finding love no matter how different you can be.
Yeah. It's pretty, like, common theme.
Yeah, very Romeo and Juliet-esque.
Yeah.
Except, you know, they didn't... Well, I'm not going to say anything. Otherwise, it'd be instant spoilers.
We're getting really close to spoilers right there.
I know. I don't mean to.
That's okay. So we did acting, special effects.
The plot.
Plot. We finally did the plot.
Okay. Likes and dislikes, if there are any.
Oh, we didn't talk about the music.
Oh, yes, the music.
Yeah.
The opening. Very Ratatouille-esque. Very French music. Yeah. Come on. You have to admit, just listening to the soundtrack or the beginning sounds very French.
Did they have French music in Pan's Labyrinth?
I have no idea. It's been a while since I've seen
me
it.
Too. Maybe. I kind of feel like there was.
But still, the minute I heard that music, I was thinking Ratatouille.
Yeah, I just think how it's cool how, like, the background, how it's, like, racist and misogynistic, and that juxtaposes, like, the artful side, the accepting side that she presents herself with, and the music kind of follows her as a theme.
Not to mention all the music, songs from the musical references, too, from all those old musicals that Giles watches with, and watches at his place, you know, she watches with him.
You think there's any importance with the stuff that was showing on the screens and stuff? Did you find anything?
All I know is that they both love old classic musicals.
Yeah.
Or at least back in that time frame, that is the It movies.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to spoil anything for them, but, like, I feel like maybe it, like, developed their characters, like, whatever they were watching. I remember when...
Oh, yeah, and they did a little dance thing together.
I know, like, everything on the screen had purpose. That's what I liked about
it. And they had the Shirley Temple reference.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah. And, there's a sense of color with each character. Like, each character has a kind of theme.
And good character development, too.
Yeah. Like, the theme of teal, like, the color teal. That kind of ran through the whole storyline. And you go to Shannon's house, like, Michael Shannon's house, and, like, it's all, like, typical 50s kind of era.
Yeah, the...
Happy family.
Yep, the American dream. A wife, a kids, a house, a white picket fence. Mm-hmm. And Come on!
You go to, like, what is his name? Giles?
Yeah.
Yeah, you go to his space, and it's spacious, and it's kind of rugged.
Not to mention, had a lot of art left and right, and lots of cats.
Yeah.
So he's the male version of the crazy cat lady, but he's not crazy. He's just a hopeless romantic at heart who lives vicariously through other people and his art. And not to mention, every time, whenever he gets a, does tries to work for art for a specific client, they always say, change it, change it, change it.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, that's life of an artist. You gotta make the clients happy in order to get a paycheck.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks, but what can you do, right? Speaking as an artist myself, but... I mean, I came close to selling my art sometime. I mean, a lot of people were interested in my art, but... There's something about it I just can't help but keep. I don't feel like getting rid of.
The difficult part is, it's that, and then it's art is so subjective. Like, no one knows exactly what, like, good art is.
Nope. Everyone's a critic.
Yeah, everyone's their own critic.
Ain't that the truth?
Okay.
Now, the hard question. Are there any dislikes?
Oh, some gripes? Like, every time I thought that I would have a gripe, I was like, oh, that's going to get me. But then, like, I thought about it for a second, and, like, it just wrapped up so perfectly in a knot. Like, the deaths, like, how daring they were. But, like, you think about it, and it was, like, a perfect arc for each character.
Yeah.
So I didn't mind it, and then...
Yeah, the only sad part was the doctor dies.
Yeah, I thought maybe, like...
Oof. Spoiler.
Oh, no. He said, I was trying to think of an excuse for you, but I can't think of an excuse. Hopefully you didn't hear that. I was thinking maybe, like, the sex scenes or, like, masturbation scenes. Maybe, like, they were gratuitous, but, like, I felt like they were important for character development in a way. So.
Yeah.
And it showed, like, a sense of routine in the beginning, so...
Well, definitely, because Eliza's role, or thing, entire life is a routine. You know, she wakes up, takes a bath, goes to work, clocks in because Zelda saves her spawn line, which irritates one little other janitor lady.
Yeah.
Work, you know, cleans, clocks out, put her head against the window so she can lay her rest her head against, so that way she can have a nice little nap on route home.
Like, her routine is, like, her sense of, like, comfort and reality. And once it gets broken, she's, like, nervous, but, like, the... Yeah. And that's why I kind of think, like, this whole theme of the movie, like, of individuality, like, growing into yourself, that's
kind of... Not to mention, she and Giles lives on top of a movie theater. That is so cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Oh, man, what was that movie? Oh, yeah, it reminds me of Hugo, because, you know, Hugo lives on top... It lives inside a train station. Wait, have you seen Hugo?
No, I haven't seen it.
Dang it. I get a little small spoiler again. What is wrong with me tonight?
No, it's okay. What was that movie playing on the theater?
What?
Oh, spoilers ahead. What was that movie that they were playing on the theater screen? Whenever the fish guy came in?
Dang it. I don't know the movie.
He was, like, fixated by it. I thought it was important. Wasn't it, like... Well, we know what they were doing on screen, right? It was, like, indentured servitude. Like, they were building something,
I think,
right?
It was something... Maybe it could have been something like Mark Anthony or something Egyptian, because it kind of looked like that outfit.
Anyways.
Ancient Egyptians, but...
I mean, it was pretty on the nose. Like, he felt like he was being, like, not exactly a slave, but he was, you know, enchained by his life so far.
Literally, because he was also in chains
when he first met
her at Eliza, so...
So maybe, like, some of the dialogue maybe was too on the nose, maybe? But,
yeah.
I'm just searching for something I dislike, but I can't.
Yeah.
I would say I mostly like everything about it. Like, the dialogue was great.
Yeah.
Like, everything coalesced into each other.
Now, the ultimate question... Grade.
Oh, grade? We have to grade? I hate that we have to grade art, you know?
Well, I meant like on a scale 1 to 10.
Yeah, but it sucks. Like, every other medium of art, you don't, like, go to a museum and say, like, this is a 9.5.
Unfortunately.
But we do it for films.
Well, yeah.
But whatever. For this one, I guess we have to do it.
Well, yeah. Or we can just... Well, leave it up to everyone else.
So it's for out of 10?
Yeah, out of 10. You know, 10's highest, 1's the weakest.
Well, nothing's going to get a 10.
True, because a 10 would just be way too perfect, and there's no such thing as perfection in this world of ours.
And what if you come up and, like, watch another film, and you're like, that's better. You can't do anything about it.
No.
So, out of 10?
Yep, I would probably give it an 8.7.
I really liked it. So I would go... I'm going to one-up you. I'm going to say 8.9. All right. So is that the conclusion of it?
Well.
This thing? Is there anything else we want to add?
Would it be interesting if there be a sequel? But then again, the movie ended so well, it may not even need a sequel.
I feel like all Guillermo del Toro's endings kind of run into each other. Like, they're all similar. Like, Pan's Labyrinth, more spoilers.
Wait. Because not everyone has seen Pan's Labyrinth. It's a nice foreign film.
Yeah.
Make sure you have subtitles with you at all times.
I didn't mind the foreign film.
Nope. I love foreign films.
Yeah. They're mostly better because American films are wrapped up in money.
Yeah, you can learn some new languages, too.
And how they see art.
Or just how... And movies in general, too.
Yeah, movies in general. I just like film because it's literally, like, larger than life. Like, you walk in there... That's why I think theaters are important.
And I also like the fact that they made Eliza learn sign language, of course, because her character is a mute.
Yeah.
Sign language is what's a pretty nice touch.
Did that a girl in Pan's Labyrinth use sign language?
No.
No. Didn't that girl end up living in the end of Pan's Labyrinth?
That'd be a spoiler.
We're already too deep. Like, we spoiled this movie.
Okay, fine. Her stepfather kills her. She comes back home to the underworld with her father because, you know, she's a lost princess
she ends up fulfilling the prophecy.
Yep, she reunites with her father and her mother, and they live happily ever after.
Like, all Guillermo del Toro's endings, like, they're almost, like, majestic in a way. Like, they end, and then you're like, it gets really beautiful.
It's like an unexpected twist, you know, like, the main character dies, just like in Pan's Labyrinth. But, you know, at the end, she still lives, because
theoretically,
in a different way, but still.
Yeah.
It ends a happy ending despite being so tragic.
So, I think that's pretty much it.
Okay, now.
How long have we gone?
Oh, boy.
30 minutes? Oh, I thought it was longer.
30 minutes? Gadzooks almighty.
We were just at 20 minutes. Hopefully you're picking this up. You think it is? Hopefully it is.
I'm crossing my fingers. Just in case.
Yeah.
Otherwise it would be really weird if we had to do that whole thing again.
This is daunting, isn't it? We're just staring at a little...
Well, you're doing the staring.
Okay, so...
Because you're holding the phone, which has the app for recording.
What's this written by? Written by Guillermo del Toro.
Vanessa's Guillermo del Toro, I salute you. Or we salute you. Yeah, we salute you.
So would you be... I was going to ask, would you be excited for, like, a sequel, but there's nothing else you could do with it.
I am looking forward to the next Guillermo del Toro film. Maybe we should have a Guillermo del Toro marathon watching all of his movies.
Yeah, and just talk about him?
Yes.
He was acting in some...
Acting?
Yeah, these are his acting roles.
Oh, Book of Life. Nice. That's I've seen weird. A little bit of that.
Puss in Boots? He's the mustache man.
I haven't seen Puss in Boots.
You haven't?
Nope. I've seen some of the other Shreks, but I have not seen Puss in Boots.
Alright. Have you seen Crips and Peak? I didn't know he did that.
I think...
Whoa.
Wait.
Remember, it was like a horror film, so you might have not have seen it, but...
probably not.
Eesh. Yeah, it was...
Nope.
Everything was like up, amp, nope. Up, and I don't know.
Okay.
Okay, so I guess... it seems like we're running out of steam.
Aw, man.
Is that you?
No.
I think it is.
Ah.
Whoops. Who was that?
I don't know. Somehow I must have accidentally thought I called somebody. But
anyways, I think we should end this.
Yes.
And then call. All right. So how do we end the podcast?
Well, I guess that puts it into a very first premiere of a podcast.
Podcast broadcast.
Oh boy, now I'm really tongue-tied.
Yeah, it's later than usual. Okay, so how does the end of whatever this is,
podcast. Randomness episode 1.
Yeah, Shape of Water.
Yep. Tune in for episode 2 when we go see Black Panther.
If we can get tickets.
Cross our fingers just in case. But if not, we can always try that, what was that Jennifer Lawrence movie called again? Was that Sparrow or
Red
something?
Red Sparrow?
Yeah, Red Sparrow.
Is that coming out before?
March 2nd.
I don't want to wait that long until the next one, though. You know?
True. Then, of course, there's...
we could always just do this every, like, Thursday and go to, like, the...
Greer movies.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have movies on campus.
Appalachian State University, IG Greer Movie Theater. And also, Appalachian State University, Greenbrier Theater, where all the older movies will be played on Wednesdays and Fridays.
In case any, like, App State students don't know about it.
True. Very true. Yeah. We gotta get some good publicity for our theaters.
Yeah.
Even if this Regal Cinema is the only theater here.
I mean real cinemas.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
real
gag now.
Cinemas.
Well, this is almost like those awkward phone calls where, like, you don't know when to end.
The awkward silence.
All right, so I'm going to end it on 34 minutes.
Okay, this is Michael.
This is Alex.
Sign off, and we wish you a good Sunday evening.
Yep.
Enjoy.